Welcome to The Dynamics Hot Dish, the podcast where Ashley Steiner, Allie Nelson, and Liz McLennan dish up the latest news and insights about dynamics in the Power Platform. Join us to explore business applications and low-code development with tips, tricks, and real-world experiences. So grab a seat at the table and let's dig in.
Hi, everyone. Allie and Liz here again from Dynamics Hot Dish. We're live at Microsoft Ignite. We have another special guest with us, Ryan Cunningham. And I have to tell you, I was really excited to have this opportunity to speak with you because I had the pleasure of watching you at Microsoft Power Platform Conference in Vegas. And when I was there, I was like, wow, this guy is really great at presenting. I want him to come on the podcast and I want to hear what he has to say about Power Apps.
Well, thank you for chasing me all the way home to Seattle to have this conversation. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been at Microsoft, what you do here, what your passions are, anything you want to share.
Oh my gosh. So my name is Ryan. I lead the Power Apps product and engineering team, the vice president for Power Apps. I've been at Microsoft, 8 years now. And that whole time, I've been working on this software project. I got here from a really small startup that was working on connector technology, basically in another space, and got assigned to this little thing called Project Sienna that nobody had really ever
heard of. I remember that.
You remember
Project
Sienna?
I had forgotten it, but now that you say that, I'm like, yeah, that's what it was originally called.
Yeah, well, actually, this software project goes way back at Microsoft to like 2008, but that's a whole nother story. But anyway, at the time... you know, it was sort of a really interesting technology looking for a problem to solve. And you know, we spent some time in those early years kind of incubating a little bit and figuring out, not so much is there value in a low-code application building project, but really what community needs this right now and how do we connect that with real value? And so that was a really interesting early time. But fast forward to today, more than 20 million people used a Power App in the last 28 days. And it's a crazy, it's just a crazy ride and business. So that's what most of the last 8 years have been for me here at Microsoft.
That's exciting. And just like a casual giant stat drop in there of how many people use Power Apps. That's amazing.
Well, Satya said it in our earnings call a couple of weeks ago.
So okay.
It's actually an undercount now, but I can say it publicly since he said it first. So.
That's impressive.
I love that. That is impressive.
So a lot of big things are announced at Ignite. If you had to pick your favorite announcement, what would it be and why?
Oh my gosh. Can I pick two? Is that
sure?
Is that
top
possible?
Two or three
so
also
top
works.
Two or three. Yeah, so hard to pick just one.
I know. Everything's so exciting.
Look, I think from a Power Apps perspective, and obviously it's a very biased perspective, but I think there are two things that are very hard to pull apart in this historical moment. One of them is very much Copilot, and I'm sure everybody who's talking to you today is talking a lot about that. But in our world, it also goes hand in hand with our expansions in governance. Because a lot of, this moment for our customers is they have to go rethink a whole lot of business process and a whole lot of software very, very quickly if they're going to stay relevant over the next 3 years. And the only way to do that is by changing the way they do software, and who implements it and how they implement it. But that's scary for a lot of people, that has risk with it if not handled the right way. And so you have to also get really serious about how you help companies scale in governing and managing and securing what they build. And so most of the energy in our team right now is going into both of those extremes. How do we help people build much more modern experiences with Copilot, and how do we help them govern and manage easier what they create and who's doing the creation? And so, we obviously announced Copilot Studio today in the keynote. That was a very big prominent factor. For those who have been following Power Platform for a while, that is the artist formerly known as Power Virtual Agents.
Oh yeah.
Allie called it.
Yep,
right away. Yeah. I'm like, wait a second.
It's even the same color in the header and same product. But not only does it have a new name, it has a lot of pretty expanded capabilities and is just built in as the extensibility mechanism for Microsoft 365 Copilots, which is pretty cool. Now, it's also now built into Power Apps. So any custom Power App you build can have its own Copilot, which is powered by Copilot Studio and can be fully extended in Copilot Studio. So there's a lot of cool capabilities there. You can build now an app that you can ask it a question, hey, how many vehicles do I have in stock in this color? And it will not only return the answer from Dataverse, but now you can make the whole app respond to it, which is pretty cool. But then you can also use the Copilot Studio capabilities to connect it to websites and to other content and to give it actions. So it just really expands what you can do with those types of experiences. On the governance side, we've had managed environments in market now for over a year. What we added here at Ignite is the ability to group them and apply policies to those groups. And that's a big deal because we have customers with thousands of managed environments now. And so individually manage them one by one is kind of tedious. Being able to do it in aggregate is pretty cool. So I would say those two, Copilot Studio, what it means for Power Apps, and what we're doing in governance are probably my top two if I have to choose two.
So, and I have to make a joke here really quick too, because Power Virtual Agents hasn't been renamed yet. So it's about time.
It's about time.
That
everything
renamed.
Ends up being renamed.
Now, technically speaking, Power Apps has also not yet renamed, but we did a couple years ago add a space.
Which counts.
Power
I think
apps.
That counts.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will tell you a story about that. I was briefing an analyst, a Gartner analyst, ahead of that Ignite. And it was just a phone call, and there was no screen share or anything. And I go through all of our feature announcements, and at the end I said, oh yeah, and by the way, we're adding a space to Power Apps. And there was like a long pause. What do you mean? It was, it'd be like Power Space Apps. There was another long pause. He goes, you're really going to name it Power Space Apps?
That's a big announcement.
Yeah. No, we're not. We're just, anyway, sometimes it's hard to do these things verbally.
Yeah.
Not,
yes. Yeah.
What was the reasoning behind adding the space? Do you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, this was because this was a trailing rename when we named Microsoft Flow to Power Automate.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, because you couldn't call it Power Flow because that sounds like a plumbing product or a laxative or something.
Yeah.
So we had to call it Power Automate, but Power Automate all as one concatenated word was just a lot of syllables, so that had to have a space, and so at some point you had to add spaces elsewhere. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. And we've digressed.
We digressed on the space
so
program.
So in our previous recording, governance actually came up, and we didn't have enough time to talk about it. So Allie, do you want
to
ask
your
governance question?
Yeah, so we were talking a little bit about governance, and the one question that I had is we heard the concept of one Copilot, but then we also keep hearing there's a Copilot in sales, there's a Copilot in customer service.
Yeah.
When you're working in that now copilot.microsoft.com, if you have an enterprise, it's only going to query your own internal enterprise data.
Right.
The information isn't shared with Microsoft.
Yep.
Does the same hold true for the Copilots in sales and customer service?
Yeah.
Are those... Okay, so it's only querying your internal data then.
Absolutely. Okay. And I think, you can use actually Sales Copilot today. That is the artist formerly known as Viva Sales. Also also a recent product rename, right? Mm-hmm. And you can connect that experience to either your Dynamics 365 data, your Dataverse data, or your Salesforce instance. Either way, when you ask it to, say, help you create an email back to a prospect, what it's doing is not really ingesting your data into an AI model. It's working a little bit differently. What it's doing is it's going and creating a search query on your behalf, effectively, and executing it as you against that backing system, whether it's Salesforce or Dataverse, and then bringing the results back and summarizing those into novel content to put into your email or whatever you're doing with the Copilot. And so that principle is really important because you're always acting as yourself, which means you're respecting the security and the governance that you've set up in those underlying data sources, even if they're external to Microsoft. And you're not passing core data into those models. And I think that's a big, important step, which is very different from AI of the last 15 years. We used to have to train the models on novel data in order to make good predictions. The big step forward with these foundation models is they are pre-trained. And so we don't need your sales leads or your sales accounts or orders to make the model better. It's already good at creating that content. We just need the data context to be accurate in what we're generating.
Okay, and then when you're talking about underlying data structures as well, again, we have Dynamics background, right?
Yep.
There's security roles, there's business units, there's teams that govern security, and security groups, Azure AD,
exactly.
All of that. So if I were to go into like my enterprise Copilot and I don't have access to our internal CE system,
right.
Would I get results from that or no, because I don't have access to the
system?
Correct.
You're acting as yourself, right? Perfect. And so you're basically getting results back just like you would get them back in the user experience or at the API layer. And so not only, you know, in that situation, you don't have access, you don't get anything. But even if you have access to, say, a table where there's some role-based access control involved and you can only read, you know, leads from your business unit and only write your own leads, that's still going to be enforced through the Copilot integration, because it's just executing those search queries or working with the API on your behalf as you are authenticated into the system.
That's amazing, and I'm really glad to hear that too, because I know that's one of the concerns, and a lot of it's unknown, right? Because this is all new, so people haven't had a chance to work with it and test all these finite details. Yeah. So it makes me happy to hear that.
Yeah.
That's
oh
good.
No, it's and really this, reassuring. And this is critical to making it viable in an enterprise. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody can go to ChatGPT and ask for a burrito recipe, but I think if we're really going to trust it with business data and trust it with business process, this is the stuff that actually makes it possible for customers to take a bet on. And so we take it very, very seriously. It's frankly one of our big advantages in the market is to be able to go build experiences in an AI era that are trustable and trustworthy at enterprise scale. 1,000 startups just got funded in the last year to go do something with GPT. Very few of them understand role-based access control and conditional access and the European Union data boundary. And you know, one of our big advantages is the ability to build with that backing in mind.
Okay. No, I love that. I do have a non-governance related question, just to circle
cool
back
too.
To,
yeah.
of tied to yeah. something else that you said earlier, but you can embed Copilot in an app.
Yeah.
Are we talking just Canvas apps or are we talking model-driven apps? I've seen it in Canvas apps. I haven't seen it other than like
absolutely
your sales
both.
Copilot, right? Sales Hub is a model-driven app. But can you build your own model-driven app and embed Copilot in it?
Absolutely. And in
awesome.
Fact, not only that, we will do it automatically for you.
Okay.
And that's another one of the announcements today is any app built over Dataverse, just an end user will have the option to ask Copilot questions about the data in the app without the maker having to do a bunch of extra configuration and setup. And so out of the box, it'll just be over the Dataverse data in the app as opposed to, you know, anything in the company, but actually creates a much more focused experience. You know, if I have an app about inventory availability, I can ask it, you know, do I have any vehicles in black in the main warehouse? And rather than having to go hunt and filter through many different screens and custom filters and stuff like that, it'll not only answer the question, but actually navigate me to the view in a model-driven app where I'd find that answer. So we're really excited about that.
And when you say ask it, is that writing text or can you talk to it?
It's writing text primarily today.
I was getting really excited.
No. We are yellable technology is the dream, right? For a lot of us. I would say we are experimenting with some of that, particularly on mobile, but we'll save that for a future event. We gotta save something to announce next time.
Fair enough.
Copilot roll and new Copilot
exactly,
announcements
exactly.
coming.
Yeah.
I also love your example of the inventory app.
Yeah.
And one thing that, so I work for Stone Ridge Software. I work for a Microsoft partner.
Cool.
And one thing that we're doing a lot there is multi-workload projects. So we're doing CE with field service.
Yep.
Or sorry, CE and finance and supply chain.
Okay.
And
yep.
then CE with Business Central.
Yep.
And I know, you know, as a CE person, we're very familiar with Power Apps, Canvas Apps, model-driven apps. CE is model-driven apps, right? So with Copilot getting out there as well, do you envision more Power Apps being available that are related to those other ERP solutions that businesses don't necessarily have to build, but that Microsoft would provide? Like, what's the future?
We're already doing some of that and already seeing some of that. In fact, there's already a couple of apps in that F&O world that are built on the Power Apps canvas, but provided by Microsoft out of the box for extensions on top of that scenario. I would say actually a lot of the really important work we're doing there is at the data layer, though, between virtual entities and dual write and being able to sort of link data between these different backends in a way that is consistent and then allows you to deliver very purpose-built experiences on top. And so that is really important for multi-workload customers that work between these different stacks. And field service, by the way, is also architecturally a Power App built by Microsoft.
Yeah.
You know, and actually that work with that team has really been helping us modernize a lot of the core Power Apps mobile architecture. That's led to a bunch of the improvements in offline data, which are now available in Canvas apps as well as some of the other announcements that actually we've come out with today. And I'm going to cheat on my favorites earlier because it's probably a third favorite. We're now, even for Canvas mobile Power Apps, we're now rendering controls natively on iOS and Android. And that's a big boost for performance and for user experience quality. And again, some of that has come out of this partnership of building a really robust workload like the field service app on top of on top of the stack. Now we're sort of shifting those advanced capabilities out to every user that they can benefit from.
Yeah, so are we still going to see, well, I shouldn't say still, but we have data versus kind of the back end for CE. Is there any plans on using Dataverse across all the other applications or anything like that? Maybe that's being hypothetical, but...
Well, you know, I would say we do already today.
Okay.
You know, and in fact, if you to go to the inside baseball of it, like that's all just one team now in terms of the data backends for our core applications. We've really expanded what Dataverse means, you know, as opposed to, you know, try to force one data structure into another and vice versa. I mean, there's a lot of things that you want and need a core ERP system to do that are a little different from what you want and need a CRM system to do. And there are reasons why these things grew up separately. But for customers that are using the full stack, we want to really erase those boundaries, you know, and make it possible to get a lot of benefit from having, you know, both your orders and your inventory and your leads and accounts in one Microsoft system, and then be able to augment that with your own custom stuff, you know, because selling and stocking, you know, running shoes is very different from selling and stocking wind turbines, and you know, customers are always going to need to be able to adapt around that whole spectrum of the system.
I love that.
Ryan, I just want to back up and make sure I heard something correctly.
Yeah.
Did you say that mobile offline profiles are available in Canvas apps now?
Yeah, they
are.
Okay,
I just want to make sure I'm like, you said that, right?
No,
okay.
And actually they're, so that is something that went into preview a couple months ago, actually.
Okay.
And so that's a relatively recent, but not actually an announcement today. And so you can actually just enable any Canvas app for offline over Dataverse data.
Yes.
Because it's complicated in other sources, right? Like
yeah.
The hard part of offline is actually knowing what happens when you come back online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you and I have each been working on the same record offline and we come back, okay, how do you resolve the conflicts and how do you merge updates? And there's also some trickiness into exactly how much do you push down to the device, because if I try to pull every record in my system onto a phone, it's a big load. But yeah, that is now available for Canvas apps with Dataverse, and we have a lot of customers using it in really interesting ways.
And do those work essentially the same way as they do for mobile, model-driven apps? It's been a long day. Model-driven apps,
Okay. So very similar. It's same engine under the hood, same sync engine, same data transport layer, all of that. And so, you know, we can configure a profile by default for your app that syncs the data that's included in your app. But you can get more specific than that if you want to sync only certain tables or certain recency things.
Yeah.
The same type of profile applies in
And you're basically using like view criteria to determine what you sync. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. So it uses existing concepts in the platform. But it allows you, you know, we found particularly for mobile, you know, a lot of customers want the control of the canvas, you know, because if I have a frontline worker or somebody else who is using a small screen very frequently, I don't just want traditional grids and forms. I want very specific layouts that are very task driven. And so that's really why we've brought it to the canvas. And I think there's a ton of opportunity there. We already have a lot of customers doing really interesting things for large populations of frontline workers on Canvas Mobile, and I expect that to really grow in the future.
I was just talking about this with a colleague a few weeks ago in the context of a field service deployment, and we were chatting about how one customer wanted to pull down all their data, and there was some frustration around, like, you are making me pick what goes offline. Can you talk to that at all, like, why it is that way today, and will that ever change?
I mean, you can make that choice.
Okay.
We don't prevent you from...
But should you?
I think with all software, great power comes with great responsibility. And I mean, the downside of syncing a very large volume of data to the device is just physics. You know, it just takes time to sync all that information. Your first time sync for that user, depending on the nature of their internet connection and the size of the data you're downloading, is going to be large. You know, if all of my data is 100 rows or 1,000 rows and it's just, you know, records, then maybe that's not a big deal. if I have 1,000,000 rows and each of those have image attachments and I'm trying to sync terabytes of data down to a class 3 Android device, that's going to be a much bigger problem for the performance that I experience with my users.
So like any design decision, the answer is it depends on the context and the situation.
Right? And that's why people need smart partners and smart experts to help them with particularly those production situations. Yeah. What we'll try to do in product is give you the best possible default, right? And that's what we live up to. But then this is a robust platform for a reason. You can always tweak and alternate around that. So you know, we do have customers who say, hey, that default profile was too restrictive. I want more history available offline on the device. And you can absolutely go build that profile and sync more down. We have a lot of other people say, hey, that default is trying to sync too much. I don't actually need my field tech to have the history of the last 15 inspections while offline. I just want them to create a new one. We can go look at history before or after the job when they have an internet connection. Great, that'll improve your performance for offline sync and delta sync. So the two big metrics we look at are time to first time sync, like when you first pull all that data down to the device, and then what is your delta update after that? Because after the first sync, then we just keep things up to date post facto.
That makes sense. So.
And you're speaking to my background working like in agriculture before too.
Yeah.
Salespeople who are going out to farms and places that don't even have addresses, they have no service a lot of the time.
Yep.
And so that's huge. And I think it's hugely important.
Yeah. My only project where I've used offline was for an egg project because they were going into milking parlors, and because of the building structure, service was not an option. Yeah. And so,
But you know, we see this being important in all kinds of unexpected places too. I mean, we have customers running large retail operations in New York City, and you have to go down into the stock room in the basement and you lose connectivity temporarily. But that's very different from a scenario where I have somebody on a mining vehicle in the Gobi Desert that needs to be disconnected for weeks, you know. And so that's why we have this concept of profiles where you can get the control to optimize and make the trade-offs that you want. As long, it also depends a lot on the hardware you're using. You know, it depends a lot on the hardware and the internet connection, what your tolerance is for sync time and sync volume.
Yeah. Well, speaking of just profiles and offline and all the different mobile capabilities kind of leading into it.
Yeah.
So is there anywhere in the roadmap of different Canvas Power Apps that'll be available for sales or customer service or people like that? Field service is a very robust one, right? That's out there. A lot of people use it in your examples that you were giving too. But what about other applications? Like sales is available.
Yep.
Frankly, not the best. I know a lot of people.
Yeah.
It has room for improvement, we'll say.
We all do, right?
But yeah, I mean, so kind of thinking Canvas app and like using Copilot in those mobile apps on the road, is there any plan for like adding that in or adding in additional capabilities?
So we are doing some work right now on what does it really mean to have a great Copilot experience on mobile? Because that, you know, even just what you want to use Copilot for on mobile is probably different than what you want to use Copilot for in an analytical setting or on a big screen. So the short answer is yes, although I don't have a lot of detail for you yet.
Okay.
That's something we're probably cooking up for one of the next events. But I do think, you know, there is a lot of opportunity, particularly in mobile. I mean, what is Copilot great at today? It's great at helping you not have to input as much information by typing, and it's great at not having you have to read as much information and summarizing things for you. Those are things that can really help out mobile users. So it's definitely an area that we are looking at closely.
And tying into what Liz asked earlier too, when she started to get excited about voice in Copilot, that would be a great capability for mobile as
Absolutely.
Well.
When I think mobile, I think pictures, videos, and voice.
Right.
Yeah, and not text.
Exactly.
Because
I want to type as little as possible on my thumbs. And even just situational awareness too, like what can the device sense and measure with, you know, we already have MR measurement support and a lot of device capabilities in the core stack. Being able to use those as inputs to a Copilot engine as well is super exciting.
The possibilities are endless.
Indeed.
It's really cool.
Indeed.
We're all talking about Copilot on the computer today, and it's going to be on our phones and everywhere
very soon. Exactly.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, so my next question for you is about if you have any advice or just stories around first-party apps versus a power app and how to evaluate when to use which. So I come from a historical dynamics background, and I still see, and I hope it's just my little narrow consulting view of the world. I hope that this isn't happening across the board, so I'd love to hear your input on it. But we tend to still sell and lead and design with a dynamics CE first. So we kind of default to CE being the solution.
Yeah.
And And obviously it's very extendable and flexible, and you can always make it fit the requirements in the process. Yeah. But at what point, let's say you're changing 50 or 80% of it, is it not worth that overhaul and that XRM kind of scenario? And when do you just decide, hey, I'm going to start with a Canvas app or model-driven app built on the Dataverse and just go completely from scratch? And Power Apps licensing is so much more cost-effective and affordable.
Yeah.
And so what are you seeing around that from a decision design best practices perspective?
So I would say this is another one of those that really depends sort of on the customer and on the situation. There, I would say, are good patterns and bad patterns for when to choose a straight Power Apps build versus a Dynamics 365 situation. Generally speaking, though, I would say any scenario where you are building software for salespeople or customer service agents or field service agents, in the long run, the total cost of building, delivering, and maintaining that solution is actually going to be much lower, and the ROI is going to be much higher by just buying it from Microsoft. Because I think what really people miss if they're comparing, the Dynamics license is this price and the Power Apps license is that price. Okay, great, but the Dynamics license comes with hundreds of engineers who are making that thing better every single month, right? And are you really going to compete with us, I think, is what it comes down to. Like, are you really going to stand up an internal team or hire a partner, not just to build it, but to maintain it and improve it over the next 5 to 10 years? Is that really cheaper than the honestly very modest difference in dollars per user per month between the two? Because you're probably not going to hire 500 software engineers for that difference in dollars per user per month for the next decade and have them outcompete Microsoft, right? And so, the IP that comes in those solutions in terms of what it means to make a seller great at selling or make a customer service agent great at servicing customers is so much more valuable than the vanilla kit of parts. And so for that pattern, my first, even as the Power Platform guy, my first advice to customers is, gosh, if this solves your problem, just use it. Don't compete with us. That's really not a winning strategy. We've seen very few customers actually really succeed at that model. Now, on the flip side, there is a lot of software under the sun that is not traditional CRM or ERP use cases. And there are a lot of humans with screens and jobs that don't need to look at the general ledger all day long or aren't sitting there answering customer service phone calls all day long. For those humans, that's where Power Platform is great. And I think to your point, if I have a scenario that doesn't really have anything to do with salespeople selling or customer service people servicing customers or, et cetera, then it is kind of the inverse. It doesn't make as much sense to try to shift a more expensive and cumbersome product to fit this very narrow use case. And that's why we have a thriving Power Apps business. But I would say, empirically speaking, just if you look at the growth and trajectory of both of these businesses, our core, Dynamics business is growing and growing way ahead of the market, and our Power Platform business is growing and growing way ahead of the market. In fact, the most widely adopted, low-code platform on the planet right now. And so empirically, these things are actually helping each other. In fact, we have a lot of evidence to suggest that customers who add Power Platform and are successful on it also use more Dynamics and vice versa. And so I think the prevailing pattern is actually mutually reinforcing in a good way. There are always anomalies, right? And there are always exceptions. But I think, just from a core software perspective, if you've got something off the shelf that serves your needs, use it. It will serve you better in the long run. If you don't, then build it. And if you're going to build it on a platform like Power Platform, because it's going to save you time and money in the long run.
And I'm sure too now, especially with all the Copilot announcements happening, it's going to become even easier to start building apps. And I'm sure this is going to be even more of a question of people getting tempted of, I can just feed it and tell it what tables I want.
Yep.
You can use Copilot now to build your own tables.
Yep.
Tried that out. It's great.
Isn't that
cool?
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yes. There's so many cool things happening.
Yeah.
Should I steal your question? I know there's a question.
I know. Yeah, you should ask it. We're thinking of the same thing.
We're thinking
of
the same thing. Okay. Liz and I are giving signals in our eyes. But will there become a point where you can use Copilot to build model-driven apps?
I suppose. And I think in a way, by having a Copilot experience to create tables in Dataverse, you're kind of 70% of the way there.
Yeah,
right. And so, in fact, I was just going through a 2.5 hour long demo with our dear friends at Forrester last Friday and showed exactly that. Let me go create several tables quickly with Copilot and then just press the button to create a model-driven app and drag that data in and look at a pretty robust Power App. So I'd say in a way we're already there. You know, right now, a lot of where we're focusing in the makerspace is around, you know, all those little decisions you have to make in a Canvas app. You know, how do I lay things out? How do I position them? How do I update properties of controls? Those are things that are tedious and take lots of steps today that it's a little different in the world of model-driven apps where it's more configuration-based and, you know, sort of modeled over the data structure. And so that's where we're really kind of pushing a lot of that Copilot assistance in line. Hey, help me add two buttons and three screens and wire them up together and make one of them gray. Those are decisions that you make and express differently in the model-driven world. But, you know, I think the other thing that is interesting to point out is we're already seeing huge success rate lift for the Copilot integrations that we do have in Power Platform. You know, Power Automate users that start with natural language are more than 70% more likely to have a successful running flow in a week than people that start with point and click. Power Apps users doing the experience you use to create a table over Dataverse and then build their first you know, Canvas app over Dataverse, more than 60% more successful at that than people using point and click. And so, and these are already on top of the most widely used low-code platforms on the planet. So it's just really cool to see that net incremental boost in effectiveness, and we're certainly not slowing down at bringing that to the rest of the stack.
Well, and truthfully, I love what you said about Canvas apps and why you started there, because truthfully, it takes so long to get things right, especially when you're a perfectionist, you know,
exactly.
And you're like, no, I want it to look like this. But what I did see, I think it was at Power Platform Conference, is like you can feed in your coloring and your branding and stuff, and it'll update that. So like even using that instead of, you know, changing buttons one at a time or whatever you're currently doing, I think it's great. I think that's a really smart place
to
start.
It'll save people a lot of time. And frankly, it just makes it accessible to an even wider population of people. There's a lot of power and capability in the fact that you can use PowerFX to get very granular and set very granular properties and controls and yet have still full pixel perfect control over a blank canvas. That's what lets you take a, say, a mobile app for a farm worker and make it very specific to the scenario. But that's a lot to learn. It's a lot to manage. And so Copilot can really just start to chip away at the cost of implementation and in doing so, make it available to a much wider set of people.
Yeah, because historically Canvas apps have been such a higher level of effort than a model-driven app. So you really, it's like, we really need this before we're going to go that route. It's just not just to make it pretty.
Right. It just makes it available to a much wider set of humans.
I think we should ask our citizen developer question.
Oh, so
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, do you want to ask it?
Sure. So it ties into very closely with what we were just talking about here and low-code platforms, right? I'd consider, you know, Liz and I are both low code. We don't know how to code things. Power Automate's technical enough for us. We're good there.
Pushing my boundaries.
And so then we also have this concept of citizen developers, right? So people within organizations who are able to use the Power Platform to build and extend. And, you know, as we're like going down that path a little bit more, what type of, well, I guess I have a couple questions around this. I'll ask the first one though. So citizen developers a lot don't understand the underlying code that's taking place when you're using things like Copilot to write a Canvas app. You call that PowerFX, right? If if I can use Copilot that's effectively using the PowerFX code to build me a Canvas app, do you think it's important for citizen developers to understand that underlying code in order to know what's happening? Or do you think it's more so they just need to see the finished product to understand that what the outcome is? Kind of what are your thoughts there?
Gosh, we could fill a whole podcast and more with this question. This is a big question.
It is a big question. Yeah.
But I think it's a big question even beyond Power Apps and citizen development in this moment. Look, I mean, all we've been doing for professional software developers for the last 40 years is adding layers of abstraction so that we don't have to write low-level assembly code. And I would say most professional software developers today don't really understand or at least don't spend a lot of time in binary anymore. You know, like all we've been doing is adding productivity tools so that we can push some of that low level work and understanding lower in the stack and be more efficient higher up. And so at some level, that is the whole thesis of low code is, you know, it's 2023. We've put a spacecraft on a comet. An AI model has passed a bar exam. Like if your self-worth as a software engineer is creating a new SQL database and then manually coding boxes of forms on top of it, there's a better way to do this now. And you can use your technical skills in other areas and for harder problems. And so at some level, the answer to your question is no, it shouldn't be critical for everybody to have to understand the underlying constructs all the way down that stack. And in fact, the only way we go drive a lot more innovation and efficiency in our organizations is we free you from having to worry about that lower layer all the time. And that's just one of the main values of why people are even professional developers building on Power Platform today. They don't have to worry about virtual machines and, you know, loading and, mm-hmm. and SQL databases mm-hmm. and how they set things up. They get to build on top of best practices where we've already figured that stuff out. And they benefit not only from not having to worry about it, they benefit from not having to micromanage the security and the scaling and all the other things that go in with running software. They're basically pushing that to Microsoft. So there's a huge benefit of that next step that Copilot provides that is really just consistent with what low-code is already doing in the market. Now, to completely argue the other side of that, it is important to have a basic understanding of how this stuff works inside mm-hmm. of the context of a Power App. And actually, we are already seeing people use Copilot as a teaching tool as much as a order taker. You know, and you know, we published this story a couple months ago on our blog about this woman, Miu, whose job as of just a few years ago was to sit in a food container manufacturing plant in Tokyo and wait for sales orders to come out of a fax machine and then manually key them into an old Siebel Systems terminal. And it was like her first job out of college. And she's like, there's got to be a better way. Finds Power Apps with no prior technology training at all, right about the time that we first introduced GPT into Power Apps in 2021, where it was very simple then. You could type in a natural language prompt and we would generate PowerFX for you. That's how she learned PowerFX. And she actually now works at a Power Platform partner in Japan, helping other cool. customers do implementation projects, totally changed her career and built her skills using AI as a collaborator. And so there is something really interesting there in AI as a teaching tool in as much as it is in a magic wand. And I think we're going to see all kinds of different patterns as people get creative with this stuff. And I think to pretend that we know exactly how it's going to play out is a little bit of hubris right now. I don't think we're really trying mm-hmm. to focus on where are we providing value and how do we extend that.
Yeah. And truthfully, you know, I agree. I think that there's a lot unknown in kind of where it's going. And I think the key is when you're starting to use tools to build Power Apps or yep. build a Power Automate, make sure you're testing thoroughly.
Yes.
Test it out. Make sure yep. it works. Make sure you're getting the end result.
Yes.
And I have to admit, too, I totally have used ChatGPT or Bing Chat or Copilot yeah. now to write like OData queries for Power Automate yeah. or say, fix this JSON for me because yep. I'm a little bit outside my yeah. league here yes. and I need some help yeah. to know where the comma goes. Yeah. And it works and it's wonderful. Yeah. And now I know. And no, I like where it's going too because I've learned and now I totally understand OData queries and how to write yeah. these things.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what's exciting to me is just it creates a new interface. Like so much of tech fluency is the fact that there just aren't great learning opportunities for people and it mm-hmm. takes a lot to learn these things. Copilot as a learning partner is a very powerful way to go extend that fluency to a lot of people. And I think the other thing that we get wrong sometimes as a technology community is to assume that all expertise that is valuable is technical expertise. You know, when I first came to Microsoft, people would ask me this question that I had never heard before, which was, are you technical? Like, that's a binary state of being, or how technical are you?
It's I've
like,
been asked that.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, 7? Like, how do you even measure that?
Yeah.
Like,
on it's what not even scale?
A thing. Right, exactly. Like,
is it a bell curve?
It's super weird. It's a weird question. Yeah. And it's the wrong question, because we want to care about people with real jobs. like the world still needs people to be agricultural experts and to know manufacturing and to understand finance. And we have created this kind of ivory tower where either you're technical or not, but actually all the valuable expertise exists in the business.
And isn't AI actually going to drive the need for that human factor and the soft skills even more because that's the part it can't do?
Exactly.
Still?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so the more we can surround people with real jobs with a virtual team of technology experts, that's really what Copilot and Power Platform represents. It can be your coder and your architect and your designer, even whether you're technical or not. It's about expanding your own team. That is what gets really exciting in terms of bringing that kind of capability into the rest of the working world.
Awesome. All right. I think that was one of my citizen developer questions. Was there another
one? There were like kind of two more follow-ups to it. Cool. I think the first one is we were kind of pre-chatting about how much do you need to understand just the structure, jargon, terminology to prompt it properly to really build out a complex flow or app? Yeah. Like, can someone just come off the street with no knowledge and sit down and actually execute on that? Or do you need to work with it to kind of learn how to prompt it correctly? Yeah.
I would say the answer to that question is changing every single week, literally. And right now and for the last few weeks, in certain situations, yeah, you do have to have a lot of prior knowledge to get the best results out of Copilot. And part of that is because there are many layers of context. You know, if I ask Copilot or if I ask you as a consultant, hey, you know, this app is great, but I need a purchase order workflow added to it. You know, what does that translate to in terms of Power Apps? That's data constructs, that's logic, that's multiple controls, that's multiple layers of components inside of an application. There are just a whole lot of different things that you need to pull out of that, and it's very multivariate in terms of what it would mean. And what would you do as a consultant or developer if somebody asked you that? You'd ask probably 70 follow-up questions. Uh-huh. You know, like you get really into it, right? So
that's
idea
why we
that,
have BAs.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, right? Yeah. And so it's not like it's kind of a big ask to think that Copilot could answer a question like that just in one prompt, because you wouldn't either, you know, and it's not magic. It's still software, right? And so the more you can break these things down, the more effective. Now, if I say, you know, add a two buttons to this form. I want a submit button and a success button, and I want the submit button to submit the form and end up on a success screen, and I want the cancel button to reset the form. That it's pretty good at that right now, because you're giving it much more specific context and direction. But what gets exciting is where it can act more as a consultant. And you know, like the questions I love to ask when I'm in the data experience building a new table is just, hey, can you suggest other columns I should track? And actually, it does pretty good at stuff like that. Hey, knowing the scenario, you told me you wanted a vehicle inventory table, let me suggest three other columns that come with those types of scenarios. That's where you start to get this interesting, like, it's acting as your virtual, architect or associate. That is what gets really exciting. And so a lot of our innovation is in kind of building out the layers of context we're able to provide to Copilot, the meta prompting we do around the interaction, and frankly, just improving the quality and depth and context of the results it brings back. And that is why I say it's changing every week, is we're literally improving query results and query quality and sort of response quality every single week as we go. And the more people use it, and frankly, the more people give us a thumbs down when the responses are not high quality, it actually really helps reinforce and improve the model to make it better.
Well, and I love what you're saying there too, because it reinforces the importance of prompting.
Yes.
Right? And yeah. Liz and I have talked about this. We talked about this a little bit with Angela earlier as well, but and when you first hear about everybody talking about prompting, it's kind of like, prompting, psh, I got that down.
Yeah.
And then you sit down and think about it and you're like, well, wait a second, this is actually way more complex than you would have guessed.
Yeah.
And I used Copilot to whip up a power page recently.
Yep.
And I get it. I got the final result and I was like, ooh, this isn't exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah.
And so I went back, I started over, tried to like add some more context. And you start to realize from trial and error almost of how detailed you have to be in order to get your perfect desired result. And I would say that's another thing to just encourage our listeners and everybody to do is just try it.
Yeah, just get hands on, use it, try it. And I think as any sort of relatively early technology that's changing fast, don't judge what it can do in 6 months or 3 months by what it can do today, because that's changing super, super fast. Start to get used to the patterns. And I think that's the important part. But it does create all these funny interim situations. You know, my favorite example is somebody who prompted the DALL-E image generation model, you know, make me a picture of salmon swimming in a stream. And it made this beautiful picture of like supermarket cuts of salmon, like jumping out of the water. It was like 100% accurate. And wrong. But that's where, like,
specific enough.
Exactly, right? And that's where prompt quality really becomes part of the story. I'm also really excited about, by the way, some of the work that we're doing around Copilot Studio and AI Builder and the ability to build prompts for GPT. That experience has just gotten a big upgrade, where now I can actually insert variables and tokens into those prompts like I would in a flow, but they're natural language prompts over GPT. So I can say, hey, given this, you know, complex inspection report, go extract, you know, items related to this topic and make me a summary exactly this way and then do this type of thing. You can also actually now do that in PowerFX in a Power app. Oh. So I can, you know, just in the formula language, use a formula to go do a GPT summary or a GPT manipulation over text and then give it very specific tokens and of input like I would any other PowerFX formula. So there's just some really cool stuff that you can do there that is... it gets very domain specific. You know, the way I want to summarize an inspection of agricultural equipment is going to be very different from the way I want to summarize, you know, some other thing happening for a finance customer. And so I'm really excited to see what people do to get creative, not just about the prompts they use to build Power Apps, but also what types of things they put into their apps for their end users.
Yeah, and I think really Liz is a BA at heart. I'm a BA at heart. We're both very inquisitive people. Yeah. And I, as we're talking about this, all I keep thinking too is the importance of that BA role and kind of BA skills for everybody.
Yes.
Right? Because as you're prompting, that's effectively what you're doing. And like what we do when we're gathering requirements is, why do you need to do this? What is the end result? What and just pretend that ChatGPT or Copilot is asking you those questions and kind of preemptively give them and your prompts will be pretty high quality.
How do we build software today? We mostly use words and crude pictures, and we do tons and tons of iteration on top of that until we get to things that look kind of like software, and then we criticize it and tweak it, and then we get to things that are actually software. All Copilot and Power Platform are doing are just compressing those turn cycles into something a little bit tighter, and I think that it's all the stuff about software that's not software that takes a long time. Being able to really compress that is super exciting.
Yeah.
I feel like we almost already answered our third follow-up question to this, which was, I guess this would apply to if you're giving it fairly vague requirements, but we were thinking about it from a best practices and just the architect lens of, you know, we always talk about doing things following best practices when you're building something out. And obviously that usually depends on the situation, the context, but can you trust it to follow kind of industry best practices if you aren't giving that it specific guidance? And if so, like, who is telling it to do what? Like, who at Microsoft is making those decisions on what best practices are?
This is a big question for all of us going forward, right? And right now, Copilot is not at the point where you can actually just say, build me an expense reporting app, and then hands off, and it makes all the decisions, right? Like, we're walking you through what we say. If you can walk up to powerapps.com, type that in, and what we're going to first do is say, great, let's build you your first table in Dataverse. And building on Dataverse is a best practice, right? If you don't already have a data source, let's put it on one that's robust and scalable and has a security
concept. It's not going to default to SharePoint?
No, it's going to default to Dataverse for a very important reason,
SharePoint
right?
fans.
We love SharePoint, and we would not be where we are today without the integration in SharePoint, but it is not a business database, right? And if I want to go build, you know, everybody with access to a list has access to every row in the list, which for a lot of scenarios is just not right. And so I think that's why it defaults to Dataverse.
And we can say the same thing about Excel.
Exactly, right? Exactly, right? And I think, you know, making it easier for people to do the right thing is super important. And so, you know, like that success rate building your first app over Dataverse is really important because historically you had to think like a DBA and you had to go design data schema, which is very counterintuitive for a lot of people who are much more comfortable in rows and columns and tables. But you know, Copilot together with a nice table designer can help you get over that hurdle a lot easier. And then you start off on the right foot. And so today we're kind of using the interplay between where we use a natural language experience and then how the rest of the experience is opinionated around it in order to lead you into those best practices. You know, and then that app that we generate on top is using a modern responsive template in Power Apps, so you don't have to build that from scratch. You know, so we're kind of removing decision points from the flow in a way that leads people to more success. That's the design philosophy that we're taking for sure.
What about the underlying code? So you called that PowerFX before, right? Yeah. PowerFX is kind of its own language in there, and you have to know how to write it. Much like other code, there's multiple different ways to get the same end result.
Right.
Different developers, engineers have different opinions on what the best practice is.
Right.
So how does Copilot know what kind of code to spit out to get the end result? Does it have any best practices in there? How does that work?
Gosh, that's another deep dive architectural topic. That
is really maybe we need a follow-up podcast. Yes. Well,
I think actually if you want to go really deep on how PowerFX is generated by Copilot, we can put other smarter people than me around the table. But I think in general, you know, there's this big debate in the industry right now on the value between fine-tuning models versus just doing better retrieval augmented generation and assisted querying over the base models. And we actually do a bit of both in the platform today in different scenarios, and are actually very closely watching what creates better results and has better trade-offs and whatnot. So I think that's actually very, very much an open question architecturally. Generally speaking, though, we're not going to go generate something if we don't believe it's high enough quality. In fact, we set tolerances if Copilot is not sure enough about what it's creating. We'd rather fail than give you bad advice.
Okay.
I think at the same time, this is also why it's really important to be a human user, right, with the system, right? In the early days of GPS systems, you heard all these stories of people who would like drive off cliffs because the GPS told
get
them
lost
to.
In the like, desert and die in Australia.
Like, obviously you drove into a desert, you know, like, and so I think at some point we need we need humans to exercise judgment in these scenarios as well. It is an assistant, and at every step it's going to give you the opportunity to give it feedback and show you its sources wherever it can as well. And you know, just like search results on the internet, you have to create some judgment before you click those links or believe what's on the other side of them, and certainly people do in any of these experiences as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to continue evolving, right? Because
absolutely. Yeah.
This all came up very, very quickly.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I guess I'll ask that question since I just said it, but how did Microsoft get all this out so quickly? It's seriously, it's amazing.
In one year.
Yeah. In 1 year. Well, it's like the technology is advancing so quickly, and we know it advances quickly more and more every year.
Yeah.
But like, this is incredible. What we have at our fingertips now is amazing. Yeah. I'm super excited to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But
no, sometimes they say an overnight success is years in the making. And I think, you know, it's not that we all just started thinking about Copilot in December of last year when everybody's mom freaked out about it. Some companies did, honestly. Most companies in the biz app space didn't really start taking generative AI seriously until January of this year. And that's why we're years ahead. But from a Microsoft, or even in Power Platform, even with GPT models, I mean, we shipped the first GPT model in Power Apps in May of 2021. Hmm. And we've noticed for a while that this technology has a lot of promise. And at that time, it was much simpler. I can generate a PowerFX formula for you, as opposed to designing a whole table. But the concepts are there. And I would say that's true of the technology in general. Like the base AI model behind ChatGPT was in market for 18 months before ChatGPT started getting everybody excited. What changed was the interface, not just the underlying tech. The models themselves are rapidly becoming commodities. It's what you do with them and how you apply it that's really interesting and differentiated. And I think that is a journey we've been on for a while. What changed in the last year is the models became far more capable, they became far more ubiquitous, and we got a lot more, I would say, intentional about how we put them together in the interface for users. And yeah, we've moved and shifted a whole lot of energy into that space in the last year. People have worked really hard, and we've made tough decisions and trade-offs to be able to do that. I don't want to diminish that at all. But it's also not something that we just started in January. Mm. It's been building for quite a long time.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
yeah, that'd be a lot.
So indeed. I know we're over on time.
Cool.
Really fast, we want to ask our closing question.
Yeah,
so absolutely.
Do you know what a hot dish is?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, what's your favorite kind of hot dish?
Okay, can I cheat and say egg bake?
Sure.
Oh, so
I mean, this is like a philosophical question to turn back to the hot dish gals, but like, is egg bake a hot dish?
It's baked. Yeah, it's baked in the oven.
And it's a one-pan dish,
in
right?
In a 13 by 9, it's in the oven. It often has crispy
100%
stuff on top. There's cheese
counts.
Involved. Like, okay.
More about your egg bake. I want to hear about, it sounds like you have a specific one in mind.
Well, no, I mean, I've got cred in the, I married into a very Northwoods family from northern Minnesota. So I have, I have some cred in this category, but it's not my own. So my mother-in-law's egg bake is phenomenal and involves like sausage and broccoli and all kinds of other stuff that comes out of a freezer.
Cheese.
Cheese, definitely. I mean, that's a given, but
Liz and I are both from Minnesota.
Yeah. Ah, okay. There you go.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah.
We love it. Midwesterners are everywhere.
I will say ice fishing at 40 below is the closest I will ever get to going to space.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. Oh, is it time? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure talking with you. I'm really excited to get this episode out to our listeners.
Awesome.
You've had a lot of really great information for us, so we appreciate your time.
Happy to do it. Thank you for great questions, and thanks for doing what you do in the community.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Cool.
All right. We're good.
Thanks for tuning in to Dynamics Hot Dish, your go-to podcast for all things Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform. If you found this episode helpful, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media for even more insights and updates on the latest trends and best practices in business applications and low-code development. We'll be back soon with another delicious serving of Dynamics and Power Platform goodness. Until then, keep innovating and building great solutions.